Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour. Every 4 years, the snow and the ice beckon, and we sit down for the Winter Olympics.
If you've been paying attention, you already know about the slope style and the latest crop of figure skating personalities, but did you find out on television, or did you find out on Twitter?
Our friend Sam Sanders is here to talk about the great spectacle of people sliding, racing, spinning, and falling. We're talking the Winter Olympics, so don't go away.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from Bleecker Street, presenting Nostalgia, a new film starring John Hamm, Catherine Keener, Nick Offerman, John Ortiz, Amber Tamblyn, Bruce Dern, and Academy Award winner Ellen Burstyn. This moving mosaic of stories about love, life, and the things we leave behind explores our relationships to the objects and memories that shape our lives. Directed by Mark Pellington with a screenplay by Alex Ross Perry. Nostalgia in select theaters Friday.
Welcome back. You just met NPR Music's Stephen Thompson. Also with us is Glenn Weldon of the NPR Arts Desk. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
And with us to talk Olympics is one of our very favorite NPR podcast hosts, the host of It's Been a Minute, Sam Sanders. Hi, Sam.
Hello. You guys are gold winners in my heart.
Oh, wow. I would share
the range of responses to that.
I would share any podium with you proudly.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It's always a pleasure. I do want to say, you know, here we are. We're talking, technically speaking, about sports.
Yeah.
And yet, with us in the studio is our buddy, Glenn Weldon, who doesn't watch sports. Is that correct?
Nope. And I was going to recuse myself from this episode because I don't care about sports. I don't care about the Olympics. Never have, never will. But then I remembered, like, you know, this is a cultural phenomenon, an international and inescapable cultural phenomenon.
Yeah.
And my people should be represented.
Yeah.
I firmly believe that the people who don't care about the Olympics should have a voice in this conversation.
By my people, I mean people who don't care about the Olympics.
Exactly.
Well, and like Olympics resistance is a thing.
Sure.
You know, there are all kinds of stories that are like what to watch instead of the Olympics. If you were not watching for this show, would you watch anything?
No.
No?
Celebrity Big Brother?
No. If I'm not going to show up for the Summer Olympics, which I don't, which at least meet me halfway because I was a competitive swimmer for a while and there is rampant shirtlessness, I am not showing up for the Winter Olympics where you take all those beautiful bodies and you stuff them into parkas.
Yeah.
No thanks.
Yeah.
Well, and tights. There's some tights going on,
Some tights.
There's
it's not
tights.
The same thing.
There's tights.
And the way you get me interested in sports is not by adding a thin slice of jingoism and sentimentality and then make it inescapable. That's not how you get me. But there are stuff I like about the Winter Olympics, but we'll get to those in a bit.
Okay. Sam, are you an Olympics watcher?
I am. So I got to cover the Sochi Olympics. I was the producer for the NPR team out there. And I'd always watched it, but after being there to cover it, it just kind of like made me respect the entire thing that much more because it is so hard to pull one of these things off.
Mm-hmm.
I can't overstate how massive the endeavor is. Like you get there and you're like, where's the Olympic Village? And there's like 17 because everything's spread out. There were times in Sochi where to get from our media room to some event, we had to take an hour-long train, then another bus, then another bus. Like, these countries are building city-states.
Right.
Yeah.
They're building temporary city-states. So to watch that and admire the effort they put in, it makes me respect it more. I also got to meet a few of the athletes, and they're really sweet kids.
Yeah.
Like, they're really sweet kids, and most of them are pretty much just like, oh, shucks, I'm really happy to be here.
Yeah.
And I like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's funny because I was thinking about this last night while watching the, as we taped this, last night was the skating team competition.
Yeah, which is beautiful.
Which was beautiful to watch. And I was thinking about the fact that one of the reasons why I get so frustrated with the things about the Olympics that are kind of icky is that the idea of it, I love so much.
Yeah.
I love the idea of just a bunch of non-professional athletes, some of whom have to do other things, you know, other jobs in life, kind of coming together from all different countries and they all, you know, mingle and all that stuff.
They do mingle.
Which is why it's so frustrating when it feels like it's overtaken by, you know, the, as Glenn said, slice of jingoism or the commercialism and all that, because I just want it to be the fictional idea that I have of what it should be.
Yeah.
And there was a piece today by Jeff Passan that was about the women's snowboard events, which were not canceled during high winds. And he talks a lot about how unsafe it is and how sometimes the safety of the athletes can be less important than the TV schedule and those kinds of things. And it's important to read those things in tandem, I think, with watching the, you know, the exciting.
Well, and like to see which athletes every 2 or 4 years become breakout stars. It's the athletes that know how to navigate that entire system.
Yeah.
And realize that it's more than just performance. You are giving viewers a show. And the ones that, like, come to play ball and do the press and meme and gift themselves do well.
Yeah.
And there's some that, like, just want to compete, but it's like, all right, you might not get that Wheaties deal.
Yeah. Or could you tell in Sochi, like, who the ones were who like...
They would talk to me, you know? And, like, they all know that they should be doing press because it just helps. But the ones that are eager and the ones that will give you time... they just get better coverage. Like, I had some athletes that would give me hours of their time and would come meet me. And they had to really navigate it carefully because all of us journalists, we could not go into their village, you know? And the athletes themselves didn't want to come into the media stations because they would be mobbed by all the other journalists. So we'd have to, like, arrange where to meet in this sprawling Olympic campus. So there'd be lots of times where I was going to interview someone. It took me an hour and a half to get there, and we talked 45 minutes. But the ones that play that game... it works out for them. But one thing that I'm really interested in when I watch the Olympics is to see how it is actually like this microcosm of global diplomacy.
Yeah.
So many of the plot lines that are big in geopolitics right now are manifest in what we see in the Olympics. Russian doping and global corruption, whatever is going on between North and South Korea, Mike Pence and America's role in the world. You can watch these things play out in the games, and I find that just as interesting as the sports themselves.
Yeah, I think that's right. Stephen, what kind of Olympics viewer are you?
I am an Olympics viewer who, for the first few days, focuses heavily on suspension of cynicism. And then, for the days and days thereafter, I'm like, slope style! So, it doesn't take me actually that long to get there. But the cynicism is constantly bubbling under. I mean, I think that NBC as a network is a very frustrating conduit through which to view the Olympics. And we say this every time there's an Olympics. There's always a certain level of, they focus too heavily on American athletes. Oh my God, during that opening ceremony, the nonstop filling the air
with words. On mute. Watch some of the stuff on mute.
They actually at one point said, to watch this without commentary. They clearly had gotten a memo, if not the memo. And I thought, you know, I want to watch it with less commentary. I don't want to watch it completely devoid of context.
It's fine with me if they, you know, when they want to drop those things that are like, this is the only athlete from this country.
Like a little factoid.
Exactly. Yeah. Like a little factoid that's like, you know, this is the first time this country has sent anyone to the Winter Olympics.
Right.
Like, I'm not necessarily going to know that. That's great.
Yes.
But it's the stuff that, like, I was describing to Stephen earlier as, like, Katie Couric reading Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Like, I don't necessarily need that part of
this is why NBCOlympics.com works pretty well, because that is just, during the opening ceremony, there were little bubbly little factoids coming up, and you could turn the sound off. Which is really the only way I got through it, because, I mean, let's talk about the opening ceremony. I mean, the drones were cool, I guess.
The drones make me very nervous.
But the parade of nations, I just sat there watching this, and like, this is what Eurovision would be like if it was run by straight people. This is just pageantry without glamour, without showmanship, without zazz. It's all pomp, no circumstance. It is interminable.
But you know what? Has there ever really been a good opening ceremony?
No.
I think back,
been good performances within.
But like, I think back to the year London had the Summer Olympics. They had a whole song and dance routine for several minutes about their universal healthcare system.
With the dancing, with the Busby Berkeley hospital beds.
Beds, and then they had a thing with them. They had several interesting.
And now the dude who invented the internet randomly.
And every everybody tries to kind of come up with not just like what do we think our nation is, but what do other people think nation is, and what do other people associate with us. And that's where I think the commentary often is so strange, is you're getting like an NBC effort to kind of translate what South Korean people mean by a certain cultural symbol, but in a very short one sentence.
And they translate it wrong because these commentators, they might know sports, but they usually don't know a lot about the actual history and culture of a country. So if they riff long enough, they inevitably say things that are culturally inappropriate. They just
It's true. But the other thing about the drones, you mentioned the drones, and the thing that was funny to me about the drones is right at the beginning or early in the opening ceremonies, they said one of the things you should know is that some of the things that you're seeing on the broadcast are not really visible to us. They're augmented reality. And then, and I had heard the same thing about, remember when we talked about the Super Bowl halftime show and lighting up Minneapolis, that it seemed to all turn purple. That I later read that that was also...
No, that was faked?
It was augmented reality.
Augmented reality. So the problem was when I saw the drones, like once you hear that, then you're like, that's at least an interesting feat if it's really drones. But I don't know whether it is or what...
I want drones to be entirely fictional.
Uncomfortable with the swarms of drones.
I do not like the idea of swarms of drones. What could go wrong?
It did look a little sci-fi and not in the good way.
I will say you never want to see those things in the space. Like having to watch the Russian opening ceremonies last time, it's really boring because you can't see the whole thing. You just see one little slice. And I remember it's hours long. So I left like halfway through. So I got it. The best seat in the house for all the Olympics is actually in your house.
I've watched a lot of sporting events.
Like I went to see Luge while I was there last time. And you just see 1 second of the thing go
work
by.
At all. You know, Luge is a great introduction to the next thing I want to talk about, which is actual sports. I was watching Luge yesterday, as I do, only during the Olympics. And I was thinking about the fact that watching Luge made me understand the fact that I can never get into Luge helped me understand how I figure out what Olympic sports I can get into.
Okay.
I can't get into Luge because, first of all, everybody's not on the course at the same time. So I can't really see people passing each other or winning or losing or whatever. You have to watch the little split time.
But slope style's so good.
No, I know. But also, it's not flashy. You don't watch a guy in a luge and be like, look at that move.
He was
ballast better than the other guy was ballast.
Unless you're like a luger.
Yeah.
I think
yeah.
it's too hard for me to tell the difference between a good luge run and a bad luge run. So A, I can't see who's ahead because they're not on the track at the same time, and B, I don't know a good luge run from a bad luge run unless you crash.
Or go
way off course up to the top of the thing, which isn't that exciting of a mistake. You know what I mean?
This is why I wanted to talk about ice dancing.
Yes.
Because the first ice dance I watched in the given evening, and they did the routine, and I just thought, that was so beautiful. That was just gorgeous. They should be so happy. And the announcer, as I thought they should be so happy, the announcer said, heartbreak on the faces of the...
Wow.
just the clearly, they are just crestfallen. The everything went wrong.
You got them mute.
You
got them mute.
Their country will not allow them back across its borders. Absolutely. Short of the telltale plop of someone's bottom hitting the ice,
I have
absolutely no way of knowing what is good and what is bad.
And somebody fell during one of the ice dancing, the team competitions that they showed in primetime, the part that they showed in primetime. Someone fell. And if someone falls in ice dancing, then I know something went wrong. But the other thing is, they have more and more changed the skating scoring so that even if you fall, you can still win. And that upsets everyone's understanding of how skating is supposed to work.
Yes.
Is that if you fall and someone else doesn't fall, you should lose to them.
Agreed.
That's how skating works.
No,
I love the fingers in the air on this.
I had exactly the same reaction to someone who I believe did have the best score and fell, I think, twice. But they only actually deduct a point. And if you're doing incredibly difficult feats of jumping and twirling and, what was it, twizzling?
Twizzles, yes.
Twizzles?
In ice dancing.
In ice dancing. You can compensate for that lost point very, very easily. But in like snowboarding, you hit the deck and it's like over.
Yeah, and you walk off. Yeah. It's like you don't even, you know, very often you don't get up and
no
try.
No do-overs.
I had a friend ask me recently, like, you don't even watch any of the Olympics? None of it? And I said, nothing, no. And he said, not even the figure skating? And I was like, okay, well, benign hate crime, that's A. B, I don't understand it. I'm this basic a gay that I don't understand anything about it. I don't understand the scoring, as you were all talking about.
Right.
I also don't understand what the music's doing, because it doesn't seem like they're actually doing anything in time to
the music. True.
Sometimes
that's
they are.
It all mystifies me. Completely mystifies.
Synchronizing your dance moves to Coldplay is a proud American tradition.
Quite a skill.
Fun music tidbit from the Olympics. So Adam Rippon, he at one point wanted to skate to his own cover of Rihanna's Diamonds and decided against it.
Yeah. I do want to talk about how ridiculously charming that dude is.
He's
how
so
much
charming.
I love him.
You just watch, and the first time I saw him on TV, I'd been hearing about him, but the first time I actually saw him interviewed, I just thought, this guy's going to be an Olympic commentator until he's 80.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, when he retires from the Olympics, he will be this incredibly charming media personality that you are delighted to visit every 4 years.
Yes.
I was so just endlessly charmed
by him. And like, it's the thing, like, these young athletes, the ones that come to play in that regard, they come to the Olympics with two jobs.
Yeah.
He knows just as well as he skates on that ice, he needs to be laying the groundwork for his career in sports commentary or laying the groundwork for those endorsements. And like, he makes it look very simple and easy,
but it's not.
His work.
Being in the Olympics itself is not going to support you for the rest
of
your life.
No.
And if you're that good of an Olympic skater, you have had very little time to develop interest in other things.
Yeah.
So, you have to be trying to set yourself up for the rest of your life.
And he's 28, so this might be his last time. First and last time, right?
He's 28, so his bones are turning to dust.
Well, this is the thing. Linda, we were talking about how the competition doesn't change fundamentally, but the context around it always does.
Mm-hmm.
And now, for the first time, we are sending two out gay men to the Winter Olympics, Gus Kenworthy, who is a skier, and, of course, Adam Rippon, as we've talked about, who is a figure skater. The last time the U.S. sent out gay men to the Olympics was in 2004. They were doing team dressage. Let that go. But, I mean, it's been a while. And I could never muster any kind of, like, America first, yay! But here, I feel invested in a way that surprises me very much.
Yeah. One of the things I think is also really interesting about where the skating coverage has gone this year is that the skating commentators for NBC now are Tara Lipinski, famous of the Tara Lipinski-Michelle Kwan years of skating rivalry.
She was like 15 when she was big.
And Johnny Weir, who Johnny Weir is like...
He's a bit much.
He is a bit much, but he loves being a bit much.
Yeah.
He's like completely at home with himself. And the two of them are really knowledgeable. Mm-hmm. They have great chemistry. And my favorite thing about them, and I said this last night on Twitter, when there's not that much to say, they just don't say anything. They just need to give you context. And they're very good, I think, at giving the right context, which is this move is important because they were explaining all about how falling does or doesn't matter that much because of the level of difficulty. And you could kind of tell when they don't necessarily agree with the way the scoring now works. But I think they are delightful commentators. And it's finding the commentators that I like that often allows me to watch the Olympics happily.
Well, I think that dovetails nicely with my other kind of takeaway from this, which is my love of momentarily visiting obscure but intense enthusiasms.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So some of these announcers, like watching the luge, you mentioned the luge, and I agree with you that it is not the most riveting sport to watch. It actually moves a little too quickly.
Oh, yeah.
And like at one point, the guy whooshes by and it's clearly something of import has happened, but it's already on the next term. Anyway, the luge announcers at one point, and I wrote this down, yelled out with absolute intensity, "The luge world will be speechless."
Except for him, because he's not speechless.
Yeah,
he's talking.
I just sat in silence, like, I guess I'm part of the luge
world.
But I'm suddenly invested in people whose names I did not know 2 days ago. And I do like that. I like that all of a sudden America's hero is Mariah Nagasu. And she's America's sweetheart, and everybody loves her, and very significant percentage of the viewing population did not know her face, her name, her story, anything. But now, like, they're just picking up whatever she's putting down. Myself
she made
included.
History. Yeah.
She's amazing.
She had the first triple axel from a woman,
American
U.S. woman, in the Olympics.
Yeah. Another thing I did want to bring up about the Winter Olympics versus the Summer Olympics is the number of countries that are able to participate is very different. And when I've talked to people who are Summer Olympics people and the Winter Olympics doesn't even register with them. And I think one of the reasons for that is that when you watch the Summer Olympics, you can find athletes who can run anywhere in the world. Mm-hmm. There's a place to run anywhere. But there is not a slope-style course in vast swaths of the world. So you're seeing a lot of, like, the U.S. team, it's like, wow, it's a kid from Colorado. Who would have guessed?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Because that's where they have slope-style courses. Even in figure skating, I mean, you do get skaters who it's like they had to skate in the rink at the mall. But in very, very many of these cases, the athletes who are available to the Olympics, you know, and maybe they're sponsored, they're not necessarily, it's not necessarily saying all the athletes are rich.
It's because that's not the case.
That's not the case at all.
No.
But I think that there's a real winnowing down of the available countries to participate. You know, like when you see who's on the podium in the snowboarding stuff and it's like American, Canadian or American, Russian, you know, it's in part, it's not just because like Americans are somehow vastly better at snowboarding, but where are there snowboarding ramps and courses and half pipes in countries where the weather never gets below 70 degrees?
And, you know, besides just the access, like when I talked to these athletes last time around, you came to get the full picture and understand that, like, the child or the young person won't make the Olympics unless the whole family's doing it with them. And there usually has to be, like, one stage parent who's getting them everywhere, making sure they're on it. Mm-hmm. Like, it is a family endeavor. And that usually means one parent should not maybe, like, be working, which changes a lot, right? And then once these kids qualify and go, I've talked to some parents that had to fundraise just to get themselves out there, too, because they're not going to pay for the parents to go.
Yeah. Right.
It is so much work for the whole family around these athletes.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, I enjoy the Olympics. We've still got a long way to go. There's still time to pick up on your favorite athletes, your favorite sports. There's still a lot of falling to watch for. I was mentioning on Twitter that the Winter Olympics are the time that I learn that my brand of national pride sometimes involves rooting for perfectly nice people to fall down.
Yeah.
Because not hurt themselves or anything.
Sure.
Just slip.
Yeah.
So come and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet at us at PCHH. Tell us what part of the Olympics is your favorite. That brings us to the end of our show. As I'm sure you know, you can follow Sam at Sam Sanders and listen to Sam's show, It's Been a Minute, wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much, Sam, for being with us.
Thanks for having me. I seriously love the Olympics and was honored to be able to talk about it with you guys.
Absolutely. And thank you, Glenn and Steven.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And of course, thanks to all of you for listening. On Friday, it is Black Panther Day here on Pop Culture Happy Hour. We will be talking about it on Friday. Between now and then, if you have a second and you're so inclined, give us a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps more folks to find the show. We will see you all back here on Friday.
Do you love trivia, puzzles, nerdy games, and humor? What about interviews with actors, musicians, and people from all walks of life? Yeah? Then join me, Ophira Eisenberg, host of NPR's Ask Me Another, every week on the NPR One app and wherever you listen to podcasts.